So continuing in chapter 8 with the 10 offenses. Then we have, did we do interpretation?
Did up to 7th.
Yeah, I thought we did give some interpretation. Yeah, we did mention interpretation. About the Upasampradayas.
Yeah, we did.
They give their interpretation. So, 7. To commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name of the Lord. It should not be taken that because by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can be freed from all kinds of sinful reaction. One may continue to act sinfully and after that chant Hare Krishna to neutralize his sins. Such a dangerous mentality is very offensive and should be avoided. So it's by chanting the holy name, then one becomes freed from all kinds of sinful reactions. In the Bhagavatam, in the sixth canto, then in the in the first chapter where it's talking about ajamil, then coming in contact with all these, with the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas, then it's mentioning that there's no, it's talking about devotional service and then the paltry amount of sin that may be there in the material world. So it very much puts it that whatever sin is there, it's so small compared to devotional service. It may be very great compared to piety, material piety. Someone may have so much like this, but at the same time, is piety is also a very small amount compared to devotional service. The piety of devotional service is so much more unlimited than the piety of the material world. Right? You do a huge amount of, you do 100 ashwamedha yajnas, which is very difficult to do just as it is, let alone then Indra will always come and give some difficulty. We see anyone who's doing 100 ashwamedha yajnas, then the Lord always comes, and, I mean, Indra always comes and tries to make some problem. Taking prasad once then is equal to 10,000. Not equal to, it's a comparison, it's not a proper comparison, but just to give an idea, it's like 10,000 ashwamedha yajnas. So how much more powerful is devotional service? So therefore, the amount of sin that is there can be removed. Like taking circumambulating Tulsi Devi, that can destroy the sin of killing a Brahmin. So we see the sin of killing one Brahmin, right? And from this, then Indra, you know, had to suffer so much and hide in all this, you know, hiding inside the stem of the lotus and all. And then after that, then that sin was divided up. Earth had to take it, water had to take it, women had to take it, and the trees had to take it. And that's still going on today. And this is a long time later. So that reaction is still being. So how great is killing a Brahmin? Right? It's so powerful. So just by going around Tulsi, then the results, the reactions of killing a Brahmin can be removed. So devotional service is so much more powerful than the material pious activities or impious activities. Yes? Loudly?
I was reading today.
Loudly.
With Gore. And that there's one in Garuda Purana that, let's say somebody...
Can you say loudly?
Yeah. Like a comparison between a sinful and pious activities. Like, for instance, you, the amount of a piety you acquire by giving 100,000 cows in charity can be completely destroyed by stealing one cow.
By stealing one cow. Wow. Steal one cow and it gets rid of 100,000 cows.
Cows giving in charity.
In charity. Yeah. Wow. That's serious. So the sinful reaction is so much stronger than the pious reaction. And the sinful reaction is said to be paltry compared to devotional service. So therefore, if one thinks, then I will commit sinful activity and chant the holy name and then counteract that, that's considered very offensive. It's like it's considered the worst of all the offenses. It's worst meaning it's the most, how you say, most terrible as far as relationship goes, that you're taking completely advantage of the Lord's mercy and the Lord's kindness in coming in the form of His holy name, that we take advantage of this and then use them for our own sense gratification. So that's considered, you know, consciously, so that's considered very, very terrible. Like that. It's considered very bad. Is there any questions on this?
Mohammed?
Yes.
What's always struck my mind with that is it's one thing if somebody's like deliberately considered in this way I'll negate, but what about those individuals who might even have tendency towards sinful activity, but also they have that tendency to take, because of their training or their higher self, you could say tendency to take shelter of the main. So they might even, let's say, sin deliberately. It's not like they just fell into something. They're actually planning to, I'm going to go and enjoy like this and enjoy like that. But still somehow, due to their regard for the name, they don't give up the name. So is that considered somewhat in the same light?
No, it's different. That's the, because this means that you consider that it doesn't matter if I do these sinful activities because I'm chanting the holy name. Mm. You know, or I'll do these things and then after I'll chant and then, you know, it's not good, but you know, I understand it's not good, it's improper, sinful, so, but I'll counteract that by chanting because chanting is so powerful. So that is, the other is just very bad habit, very deep conditioning. So because of that, one is either, how you say, by, you know, habit indirectly falls into these things, or, you know, pre-planned falls into. But both are considered not, it's not considered so great. Mm. But planning that to do, and then planning to chant the holy name, that's considered very bad. Like that.
And for one who knowing these sins, is there much more reaction?
Definitely. Well, especially if he knows, if he has knowledge that it is sin. Mm. You know? Like that, like you see in the Western cultures, they don't necessarily know some of the stuff they do is sin. They're getting reaction, but it's not as much as you will in India, where you know the culture, you know it's wrong. Because then it becomes offense. Offense is always more than the sinful reaction. Yes.
Always in the Dharma Shastras, it mentions that, let's say, if a Brahman commits a sinful activity, and he goes to hell for longer than somebody who is not like a Shudra or somebody else. So because of their knowledge and all that, they should be more.
Mentions that.
Yeah, he mentions that.
Is saying the point that in Dharma Shastra it'll say that the Brahmana who has knowledge, then if he commits a sinful activity, you know, because he knows, then can you tell them to be? Means guest means quiet. How do you say? Because of their knowledge, then the reaction is greater than someone who is not in knowledge. You know, like that. Someone who's not educated in the proper, the reaction is less than someone who has the knowledge. Good point. Anything else?
Maharaj, with Jaya and Vijaya, was it considered that they were extremely sinful, but they had never actually made aparad? They were papis, but not actually aparadis.
Means as
all the time of their encounter with Lord Nityananda, where they struggled.
It means in the material world.
Mm.
Yeah, well, they were just taking on the demoniac mentality. Mm. So in there, you sincerely think that performing all that nonsense is the proper thing to do. So it's not that they're in knowledge. It's just that they sincerely believe in, you know, all this kind of, you know, politics to get what you want, and, you know, supremacy of themselves and all that. Well, see, the thing is the sinful that will do. When sinful activity is there, taste is lost. So you'll generally see that less is there. But sinful, because material world means, first of all, there's two different definitions of sin. The ultimate definition means anything that's not Krishna conscious is sin. And anything that is Krishna conscious is pious. That's when you consider the whole cosmic creation. Then when you only consider the material world, then pious means following the laws of God, and impious means going against them. So now, in this, so what we're dealing with here is meaning the sinful activities of the material world. So even though they're bad, they're not considered that bad by Krishna as compared to deviation in philosophy. Like that. So generally, the tendency is when we get into religiousness, religiousness is to establish morality. It's a subsection of dharma. Is the how you say, just the respect for others and all that. That's a side, a natural thing, product. So all morality and all those things come along. So then, the living entity in the material world takes the material world very seriously. So then the pious and impious, they take those very seriously. So the impious activities are taken more seriously by the living entities than they are by the Lord. Because the Lord, it's in the material world, you only have the two, pious and impious. But ultimately, both are impious because they have nothing to do with the Lord. But the pious is better because you're in line with the Lord's instructions, though not necessarily Him as a person. There's more of a chance of one taking up Krishna consciousness in a difficult situation than someone who's impious, who will rely more on their own abilities and intelligence. The pious person will have a tendency to turn towards God, while the impious will tend to rely on their own abilities. So even the sinful activity, it's not that, it's there's reaction for that. So just what that's coming is there. It's not that if someone becomes sinful, that Krishna takes that seriously and then completely removes all taste and this and that. Because both pious and impious, if they have nothing to do with Krishna, ultimately lead to the same place. The impious person, after a while, becomes fed up with that and starts to become pious. The pious person goes to the heavenly planets. There's unlimited sense gratification there. You don't really have the principles of dharma to follow. They're on a different platform. Right? Dharma is to get you to that, to the heavenly planets. Once they're there, then they have a different platform that they work on. They drink their liquor. They can sit out in the garden and enjoy sex life for years on end. You know, they can get absorbed in all these things that a human being they wouldn't do because they have no work. The human being has to follow the dharma because he has to work and get his reactions, pious or impious, to his activities. He has to work as a Brahmin, as a Kshatriya, as a Vaishya, as a Shudra. Like that. Demigod is only there to enjoy. Right? Just like you're at work. You have a schedule. You have to follow that schedule. You have to please everybody involved. You get your pay. Then 2 weeks a year, you get a vacation. You take your money, you go off on vacation. You don't have to follow any schedule. You don't have to do anything. You just burn up your money. When your money's finished, back to work. Right? So they don't have to follow any of these things. Because they're situated in a lifestyle, basic understanding of goodness, like that, then even though they have a lot of passion, but the atmosphere that they're in the mode of goodness. So they prefer the activities and culture of goodness. Like that. though they try to enjoy the senses through that. So they are very much absorbed in sense gratification. Now you get where you can take intoxication, you have sex all the time. You're looking very beautiful, physically very, very beautiful. You know, you live in big palaces, you fly around in fancy vehicles, you know, swan airplanes, really that. Now, you take, how much more of attachment will you get to that? Here you're in the material world, you want to get to the heavenly planets. But to do that, you're restricting yourself. You're not taking any intoxication. You're restricting your sense gratification. You're restricting your eating. You're restricting everything you do. And then you get that. Now there, no holds barred, you can go for it. Then, now, are we not going to become more attached to those things? So now, what do you find that the living entities who are here and who are, let's say, are born in good families or born in good situations, because it says that after going to heavenly planets, they take birth in aristocratic families. What are they into? Intoxication, sex all the time, fancy houses, fancy vehicles, fancy furniture. They look very nice, and they're always into ornamenting their bodies and decorating their bodies. What's the difference? There's no difference, because this is just the last remnants of their piety. It wasn't enough piety to keep them on the heavenly planets. But it's enough piety to give them a position of advantage in the material world. It means on this platform, on the earthly planet. Right? But they have the same mentality. You understand? So now, what do they do? Here, it's considered sinful. Right? So one life, you're very, very pious. From that, you go to the heavenly planets. You enjoy. Then when you come down here, there's every chance that now you're going to take the impious path. Now you're going to start going down. Then you're going to go down, 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 and when it gets too much, then it gets too annoying, you start coming up. That's why it's called samsara. You come up to the top, human form of that, demigods and that, and then you go down into the animal species and back up into the human, back down into the animal. It just goes around. No, it is, but still, the weakness of sinful life is not taken that serious by Krishna. It's taken seriously by us. It means we hear someone bloops, then in our mind, the guy should just be obliterated. You know, he should be wiped out from, you know, as a living entity. He should be, you know, God should push the delete button. But in God's mind, this is what you've been doing since time immemorial, so that in this life, you started to take up devotional service. That scene is pretty good. Right? Like you had, let's say you're in a jail, and you have prisoners who are like, they, how do you say, I forget the name of it, but they're a class of prisoners that they're not allowed to associate with the other prisoners. They're so bad, they have their own places. Anywhere they move, there's guards with them. You know, they can't even just walk in the normal line to, you know, go to eat or go to their work. They go with handcuffed, and with two guards with guns on either side of them. You know, they're just bad. So now, if someone like that starts to behave a little nicely, you know, but then every now and again, you know, has his fits of relapse, now how will the warden look at it? They'll look at it, hey, this person's improving. Right? The others, you know, will say, he's very, very bad. Okay, he came up a little bit, now he's, you know, this guy's really bad. But the warden sees differently. He sees, oh, some improvement. Because his mind, everybody here is bad. Everybody in the material world is bad. Right? By their activity. They're here because they've chosen to forget Krishna. So they're bad. But now, because the inherent nature of the soul is to serve Krishna, if anybody takes that, even to a little degree, Krishna is very happy with that. Now, if they're very careful, the basic thing is going to be is how much they see this as bad or not. They don't see the sinful, you know, activities as bad. And then they take up association to match that is bad. Then what happens, they'll become offensive to devotees. At that time, then Krishna becomes serious. Not because they're doing the sinful activities, because they're offending devotees. Like that. But like you were saying, that's a general path of that. But you can have those that by bad habit, perform sinful activities and feel bad about it. And for such a person, Krishna still sees him as saintly. That's what he's mentioning in the Bhagavad Gita. If they don't feel bad, then it's kind of neutral. But the problem is there's every chance that then they'll get into bad association. And in that bad association, that's where they'll go down. Because until you become offensive, sins aren't that powerful. Sin is powerful. It can wipe out a lot of piety. But it is not as bad as offense. Offense is worse. Yeah, offense to the Vaishnavas or like that. Especially that. Offenses to the deity doesn't take so seriously. Because one can take shelter of the name. But if one is not careful about the offenses of the name and he offends Vaishnavas, that's why the first verse, the blasphemy of the devotees. They go together, but at the same time there is a difference. Because Krishna, for Krishna, it's not like, oh, he's committed sinful activity, he should get it. Krishna has no feelings of, to him, pious and impious, they're all the same. You know? Because they both keep you in the material world. So for him, it's devotional service, that's significant. Like that. So there's a difference. This is the difference of the platform of dharma. Is then the duties become the predominant. While sub-religious principles, then being moral is predominant. And if you're not moral, you're finished. I mean, that is the, basically most of the non-Vedic religions, that's the thing. You're not moral, that's it. You're eternally damned. There's no way you can be saved. I mean, you're finished. Because if you don't say that, then the others will think, well, I can also be immoral and I won't be finished. So the only reason to keep them from that is that if you do this, you're eternally damned. But in dharma, you don't find that. You perform pious activity, you get pious result. You perform sinful activity, you get sinful result. So there's not an unlimited result for sinful activity. It's a big result, but not unlimited. Just like pious activity is not an unlimited result. Right? But in dharma, they generally emphasize the piety, because that's what you should be doing, and they emphasize the result of it. So then they make that look bigger than it is. Therefore, the fifth offense of the holy name is you'll take the holy name, glories of the holy name to be exaggeration, because the glories of the karmakanda are exaggeration. Right? The reactions that are mentioned in Bhagavatam to the sinful activities, that's not, or anywhere else, that's not exaggeration. That's just as it is. You do this, you get this reaction. But saying that going to the heavenly planets and you'll enjoy, you know, it's deathless, all these, that's exaggeration. You get a lot, but not that much. So the whole point is that it's the understanding of the philosophy. It is trying to please the Lord. That is the significant thing. Then along with that, someone who has that, they will follow a pious lifestyle, because the pious life is the life given by Krishna. Dharma is the lifestyle established by Krishna. So it matches the philosophy, but the dharma without the religion, without the philosophy, is just religion. I mean, it's just sentiment. So it's only sentiment we think, oh, this one's so sinful, you know, they're a nonsense, Krishna's going to get them. No, Krishna's not going to get them. Material energy will get them. They perform this activity, they get this reaction. From that activity, they get that reaction. Bus. Krishna doesn't, you know, what is it? What's it called? Stick the boot in or something. You know, he doesn't try to give some extra, you know, that we do. You know? It's like, you stick the knife in, but that's not good enough. You got to turn it also, you know? Like that. Then we feel good. Like, we feel good knowing that that person went off and got into this sinful activity, then they got run over by a car and hospitalized, and they're in a full body cast. And we think, yeah, see, that's what happens when you give up devotional service. No, you just do that sinful activity, that's what you get. It's nothing to do with the devotional service. So the whole thing is practicing devotional service is the greatest benefit to the living entity, and not practicing is the greatest non-benefit. So the devotee feels compassion that those who aren't following, they could be following. Not that, oh, these sinful nonsense karmis and all that, and it doesn't matter what happens to them. When we take that attitude, then it restricts our preaching. Therefore, you get things like, what do you call it? You know, so many techniques that we use in Sankirtan and book distribution, money collection and all that, come from this point. Oh, they're sinful nonsenses anyway. So whatever we can get out of them, then it's to their benefit. We don't consider that here is a living entity that by Krishna's grace is being given the opportunity to take to practice some devotional service by buying a book or giving some money. And this is, for them, this is wonderful, because Krishna says, if you can't surrender, you practice sadhana bhakti. If you can't do that, then you follow the varnashram. If you can't do that, then give something. Right? So here, they're working hard, their karmis, they're getting the result, and then they're giving that for some Krishna conscious activity or for a Krishna conscious book. So they're getting benefit. This is their devotional service. But because of the mentality that sinful life is so bad and terrible and they should be really, you know, kicked for that, you know, which comes from the non-Vedic background, non-Vedic religious background. Therefore, we deal in a way that does not cultivate them in devotional service, but that may be the end of their devotional service. They'll do that and they won't want to do any more, because they feel they've been tricked or cheated. Like that. Rather than it's a matter of cultivation, it's a matter of exchange between the devotees and those who haven't seriously taken up devotional service. So there's this underlying attachment to sin and piety also then comes through in our philosophy. Because it's sub-religious principles. Right? Sub-religious. It's not even on the platform of Dharma yet. So the Bhagavatam has already kicked out Kaitava Dharma. Means Dharma, which is following the laws of God that are dealing with just the material activities in the material world that don't really have any direct connection with Krishna. You know, like all these big elaborate Shraddhas and all these kind of things. Like that. That's being kicked out by the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Let alone just the morality that is your central focus. Therefore, then, when we look at, okay, senior devotees have fallen down or have done so many bad activities, why do we consider it so bad? Is anybody looking at it that this devotee, as a temple president, is supposed to be giving shelter to the devotees, and the devotees are supposed to reciprocate with that because of his proper nice, they feel sheltered, then by feeling sheltered, that they then surrender themselves more, they engage themselves more, they go out of the way to do more because this person is doing more. Is that the complaint? No, the complaint's lower than that. This person, you know, behaves badly, he doesn't consider the individual, you know, he's very rough or he's a megalomaniac and all this, and it made me upset. And so this guy's bad. Or, you know, he ran off with the secretary or this or that or something else like this. So it's not even religious, it's sub-religious. And not only that, it's only sub-religious principles that are accepted as bad in the religious denomination that they're coming from, of their own conditioned background. Because you'll find, depending upon their denomination of what they came from, they consider these things worse or less. You know? Like that. You'll see that. You can see what was their conditioned background they came from. They look at these things more or less seriously. Some denominations, then they will consider, okay, everybody has their bad day. You know? And others will just say, one little thing wrong, that's it, finished. You can never be a manager again, never give a lecture again, never do this again, never do that again. You know? Like that, just once you've made the mistake, that's it, finished. And others will say, okay, you know, if he behaves properly, has a proper attitude, we don't care what he did before as long as he's trying to get it together now. And then yeah, that's another thing. We're just talking about just the activity of the cells. Means there's activities someone has done, and devotees won't let them back into the movement, or don't want them in a position in the movement, like that. or you know, or just think those who are in the position should be removed from those positions, based on the activity that they've done. So of course one has to consider these activities, but what I'm saying is the balance and the weight of devotional service compared to pious and impious material activities, it's totally out of balance. Because it's just like this. Someone has, let's say, the nature of a manager. So now, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is engage your nature in Krishna's service. So if someone has a managerial nature, you can't change that nature. Conditioned nature is fixed. You can purify it. You can't change it. Right? It's like Arjuna saying, I'm going to change it and go to the forest and be a Brahmin. And Krishna's saying, no, you're not going to change it. You're going to be the same. You can purify it by engaging it in my service, but you can't change it. Right? You can't change this body. It's not suddenly I'm just going to decide I'm not going to be weak anymore. I'm going to be very strong, or you know, I'm not intelligent. I'm going to become very intelligent. Or it's just what you got, that's what you have. You know, that's just the body, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, that's what you have. You can purify it. You can't change it. So now, how is that person going to become purified in devotional service if he's not allowed to manage? We would see, Prabhupada, someone would do something improper. They were a manager. When they got it back together again, what did he do? He put them right back in their position. Whether it was GBC, temple president, sannyasi, didn't matter. Because that is how they're going to purify themselves in devotional service. Right? No, but if the mentality is such that they understand it's wrong and they're humble, then that can be there. But in anything I've seen in dealing, means they'll sometimes talk about the humility or this or that's not right, but when they talk to the person face to face, that's not what they're saying. They're talking about they've done this wrong, they can never be a manager again. Like that. Because managers should have ideal qualities. Yes, of course. That's there. But now, how do you get those ideal qualities? You have two ways. Materially, spiritually. Spiritually means that we take up duties that we don't have the qualities for, but by doing them, we get them. Materially is you develop those qualities, and after having those qualities for a long time, you get the position. Right? So Prabhupada always preferred the spiritual. So in that, then it would be talked with, okay, Prabhu, you know, you did this and this, and devotees are feeling that you're not very, you know, you're not very considerate of others and this and that, and so this has to be there. And if we see that, then everybody's happy that you do this. And if you don't, then, you know, they would rather you wash pots or do something else. And it's very straightforward. I've never seen this said. Never. Some individuals think like this, definitely. But as a rule, I've never seen it. I mean, I've seen him deal with a lot of people since 81 when they started with Jayatirtha. Jayatirtha, then they were working on the principle, okay, you've fallen from this position, this and that, then, you know, you try to reestablish yourself in this and this and that. You know, he couldn't, so then he's out. But he was given the chance. But as time went, then no question of giving a chance. And when you don't give a chance, then why anybody wants to... Because they're going to lead anyway. So then they're either going to lead for Prabhupada or they're going to lead against Prabhupada. There's a difference between covering up and trying and being confidential. This is also a very big problem of the New Age thing. Because if we want to get into it, then why don't we get into it? Then anything that goes on anywhere is a cover-up. Why don't we lay it out on the table, everything, you know? Okay, you know, what was your mentality last time you ate a feast? How much do you overeat? Wow, they ate... Did you know that they eat 4 spoons of sweet rice? Did you know that? 4 spoons of sweet rice? Not only that, they had 2 spoons of cheese subs. Plus they ate this and... I mean, you could make it... So... Confidentiality, it's just like this. I have a problem. Now, what is the common person going to do if they find out about the problem? Are they going to come forward and say, yes, Prabhu, you know, we all understand everybody has a bad day? No, they're just, it's going to be a topic for discussion in the courtyard. Right? It's going to make somebody's day for the next few days until the next, you know, fiasco or issue comes up. And that's what's going to keep them alive by discussing. That is the meaning of just the mass, the common people. So by now, what does it mean by guhyam akiti prichati? You go and reveal your mind to somebody, and that person then tries to help you. Right? Then you become resituated in devotional service. That's not called a cover-up. Now, if you go and explain to somebody, or they find out about it, that you're doing something wrong, and there's no effort to correct your behavior, either by instruction or by making some adjustments in your situation or program, so that you can purify yourself. It means continue your service, but in such a way that those things that give trouble are removed, and those things that are going to enhance it are increased. That's called a cover-up. But there has to be, just because it's not told to everybody in the world, those who just want to know about it just because it happened, this is not proper. If it has nothing to do with them, that they can't help it, what is the benefit? If I, as a devotee sitting here, you know, find out what the temple president and, you know, wherever it is, you know, some you know, out-of-the-way place in America, what they did, you know, what does it matter? You know, and I say, well, it's a cover-up if I don't know. Why do I want to know? What benefit is it going to do to my devotional service? I can do nothing for the person. I can say nothing to help the person. You know, unless they ask my opinion. How to help this devotee, and then I may say this or may say that. But otherwise, what benefit does it make for me to know? So we have to see that the claim for cover-up is not just our own sense gratification for prajalpa. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, talking about devotees, what they've done wrong, without being in a position to help them, is prajalpa. It's no different than, you know, reading Newsweek or something. You know, you look in the section of who did what, you know, milestones, you know, this one born, this one died, this one, you know, ran off with this one, and this one did that. What's the difference? It will do nothing for my devotional service. It does nothing for their devotional service. So it's maya. So why would someone want to know? Right? Of course, one can say this is, you know, putting the head in the sand. But it still is prajalpa. You know? We have to, at some point, accept that the philosophy has some meaning. Yes, Mataji.
What you're saying, we can understand it's very unfortunate that the general devotee places a higher emphasis on morality and immorality rather than offenses.
Yes.
So how do you see that being overcome on this basis?
By philosophy, by preaching. It means devotees have to accept the philosophy and culture of Krishna consciousness. You know? Because you see, when Prabhupada was here, someone did something. And, you know, it's not like when they found out that Karandar hadn't chanted his rounds for 1 year that everyone thought, yeah, toss him out, you know, this, that. And they were feeling very bad. Here was something that they really had respect in, really helped them in their life, really made Los Angeles a dynamic, you know, temple. But he wasn't able to continue his service because he couldn't chant his rounds. So they were feeling bad, the loss of such a devotee. You know? Rather than, all right, let's get this guy. You know, he should never be allowed to do anything again. Later on, we see that Krishna made him, you know, he made him a GBC of India. So he was together as the temple president of Los Angeles, then he went down. When he got it together again, he was made one of the GBCs in India. So that's how Prabhupada said, this man is a manager. So engage him according to his nature. You know. Also, I think Prabhupada is a manager. He wanted to do something in India, and then Prabhupada was saying that was where the fat horse, thin horse came from. He was saying that so many other big managers got washed away by trying to manage the river of Indian management, and then here comes the thin horse, and he says he's checking, you know, how to get across, you know. So, I mean, that was there. But point was, is Prabhupada engaged in management. That was my point, is that the first principle is devotional service. Can it be established? If we see that, no, the person's not going to act any differently and is going to get themselves in the same trouble, then that's not proper. So then they have to be preached to, or the situation has to be adjusted to make that not happen. And if that can't be done, or there's no willingness on their part, then you can say, all right, better they don't manage in this way, or at least not people. Okay, give them some things, give them a go-down or something. You know, they can manage the go-down, you know. They can be a megalomaniac with, you know, all the books or something, you know, like that. You know. Okay, all you books, you're going over there in that corner. You know, it's like that, you know, whatever. So they manage, but they don't bother people. But some way it has to be seen how to engage. And if all that fails, then okay, then they can go off on their own, manage outside the material world, and do whatever they can for Krishna. But this whole thing of all or nothing is not good. It's either you're 100% perfect, or, you know, you're a write-off, and we don't want to, you know, hear about it. So if that balance is there, then that is good. We can say so many managers, this, that. But that's from top to bottom. You know, if you add it up, there's been more temple presidents that drove people nuts than there have been GBCs and sannyasis. You know? And like that, just generally they don't talk, you know, everybody doesn't talk so much about that. It's less obvious. Mm-hmm. But one has to find that balance. Is that the philosophy has to be the first. You know, then that's supported by dharma. Dharma is supported by morality. It means dharma includes morality. And philosophy includes the dharma. Right? The philosophy has to be applied. So you must have a culture through which to apply it. It's already connected to there. And then within that, you're going to be nice to people, you're going to be fair, you're going to be just. You're going to be equal. That's all part of, that's all comes secondary naturally with dharma. So if we haven't found it, means we haven't understood how the philosophy applies in the dharma. We just see philosophy is here and morality is here, and we don't see them connecting because we didn't connect it through dharma. Means the leader didn't lead like he should. Followers didn't follow like they should. You know? And the devotional process was not being applied. Or it was not being applied properly. Does that make any sense? Or like that? So it's a whole nother way of thinking. And one has to be broad-minded to think like that. And it requires some reduction in sense gratification on one's own part. Otherwise, if one can't reduce it on one's own part, then if anybody else is engaged in any sense gratification, it immediately agitates our desire. Right? So that means that the ideal leaders should be madhyamas. And if they're situated on the Kanista platform, of course, that's there in the beginning. Everybody's going to be like that. But at some point, it's recommended that one comes up. Otherwise, it'll always be disturbance. But the solution is not that the Kanistas make the Madhyamas' life miserable either. It means that's why the whole point of confidentiality. The Madhyama has problem or a Kanista has problem, they can go to someone else and have that person help them. Right? Now just like this, let us say you have a person who has a problem. Right? They go to another devotee that they trust and respect. Now, what do they expect from this person? They expect confidentiality, and they expect some good advice and encouragement how to get properly back on the devotional path. You know, and maybe some help, personal help other than advice. Maybe they'll make some arrangements or some way keep an eye. Right? Now, if that person that they've confided in now goes out and tells everybody, what is that other person going to think? Okay, so now does that match up with the New Age philosophy of being individual and caring and all that? Right? So this is a very major serious discrepancy in the modern approach. Is that we're talking, you know, the individual and the leaders aren't taking care of the individual, this and that, but the leaders themselves are individuals who also must be developed as individuals. So if our idea is leaders just, you know, they're a tattva and just they have to be, you know, wiped out and dealt with in this way, then in the same way is the general devotee is going to be dealt in the same way. You know, live by the sword, die by the sword. Live by impersonal dealings, die by impersonal dealings. We're an individual, the manager's an individual. So if we see individual solutions for managers' problems, then we're going to get individual problem solutions for our own problems. It's not that we should get individual dealings and the manager should get impersonal. It can't work. It has to be one or the other. You can't have a dual standard. Right? So duality means material. Like that. So therefore, duality, which is material, has to be seen in light of Krishna. So according to Krishna, what is good and bad? Not according to us, what's good and bad. Because according to us, it's always going to be mixed up. According to Krishna, it's always going to be right. So this right and wrong has to be seen from Krishna's vantage point. So a manager does wrong, it's wrong. But now how do we correct that? Do we correct that by a Vedic paradigm, or a Catholic paradigm, or a Protestant paradigm, or by a Judaic paradigm, or, you know, maybe we can throw in a Buddhist paradigm?
Mixture of all of them.
Or a mixture, you know, a cocktail, take what you like, leave what you like. So that's the thing, because we don't have another. Where does our concept of morality come from? It's coming from our background. And what is our background? So is that perfect? No. So that's the thing, is this Krishna's paradigm is perfect. The Vedic principles are perfect. Especially when you hear them from the perfect souls, like Srila Prabhupada. Then it becomes very, very good for dealing. So it's like, if we won't extend ourselves to the leaders, we cannot expect the leaders to extend themselves to us. Prabhupada extended himself to everybody, everybody extended themselves back to him. Right? How you deal is how the other person is going to react. It's just, that's rasa. It's rare you're going to find someone who, don't, no matter how you deal, is going to act perfectly. But that is a very highly trained individual. Even in the material plane, those who are very, very trained from very cultured backgrounds, they can run into a very uncultured person who behaves very badly. They won't lose their culture. But that's only because of their training. So unless there's some systematic training for training the leaders, and for training the devotees, then you can't expect much either way. Can't expect. You can't expect the leaders are supposed to be perfect, but they have to understand our mistakes. Right? Leader has to be perfect, but they have to be broad-minded and understand our mistakes. No, it has to go both ways. No? Or at least amongst the leaders, it has to go both ways. The common devotee, okay, they don't understand these things, they just look up to the leaders and expect them to behave properly. But the leaders themselves must deal properly. And when they do deal properly, if it's said to be a cover-up, that's nonsense. That is 100% nonsense. Because it's nothing to do with the other person anyway. Like that. It has to be seen as... But we defined before, what's the difference between a cover-up and helping somebody? Helping somebody means you're confidential and you give them directions in which they correct themselves, and no one needs to be the wiser. What does it matter? What does it matter if 5 years ago they did some nonsense or five lifetimes ago they did some nonsense? What does it matter? For the soul, it doesn't matter. Just because we know this lifetime and we think we're the Kshetragya, right? We think we're the know-it-all, see-it-all, have the answers to all, can do everything all, because we're so confident that we're the doer, we're the controller. Therefore, what I know from this life, what goes into my ears, therefore I take so seriously. You know, point is we come in very high positions. You fall from the spiritual world, you cannot have gross attachment to gross things. You have attachment to enjoy the material nature. But it's very refined. So you start off in big positions. Lord Brahma, big rishis, big demigods. You don't start off, a dock worker with tattoos on your arms. You don't start off there. The living entity does not fall from the spiritual world and take birth in those positions. They don't. So that we got ourselves from there to here is because of our own nonsense. And that means anyone that you find on this planet here has been through plenty of nonsense. If we were sitting on Satyaloka, it's a different thing. If we're sitting on this planet, it means every living entity here has done plenty of nonsense. But we don't worry about that. We don't even worry what they did before they were a devotee. So now, what they do as a devotee, if they do nonsense, this means this is where really serious conditioning is. So we need to see, can we work out something for this person so they can purify that conditioning in their service or in some kind of service? Or is it better for them to go out into the community, you know, take care of themselves and whatever they can, take part in the temple, right? But just to hear it and just reject, one has to be very, very careful, right? Because why are these problems there? Right? Everybody knows when you have the boss and he has this fancy-looking secretary who's unmarried, you put them in a room too many times over too long a period of time, that the modes of nature are going to take effect. Any karmi can tell you. So why the devotees can't figure that out? The karmis know it, but they don't have any alternative. They don't see it as so bad. But for the devotees, it's seen as bad. So then why do we follow the same paradigm? But we demand it. Right? You know, sannyasis fall down. Has anybody, I've only heard in the last year talk about maybe the sannyasis shouldn't have female secretaries, cooks, servants. In the last 1 year, I've heard that. Before that, it's, they're taking sannyas too young. Okay, you know, instead of just taking any time, they should be 30 years old. Then it should be they're 40 years old. You know, then it's like, well, maybe we should see, you know. No one ever thought, well, maybe following the Western paradigm of mixing men and women is not good. Right? So therefore, why don't we look at it from that angle? Because you see, Prabhupada, his secretaries were men. If he had a woman cook, very in the beginning there were some there, but they were there with their husbands. He never had unmarried girls traveling with him, you know. Or if there were women cooking for him, he didn't know about it. He was in a temple and the girls cooked. It was between, the temple president arranged it. It wasn't his own personal arrangement. Right? So one has to see these things. Just the culture. If it's not working, we're not applying the culture. When Prabhupada says fire and butter, he means fire and butter. You mix the two, the butter will melt. Guaranteed. So, therefore, we have the culture, how to mix, how to put the whole together. And then it works very nicely. But if we're going to be adamant that we don't care for these things, then we also should be a little callous to the results that come afterwards. But if we're so hypersensitive to the results that come, and so callous to the culture that would maintain the qualities that we want to see, then this means highly untrained, highly illogical, highly uneducated. So there must be a balance. We see when Prabhupada was here, there was a balance. All these things are going on. Temple presidents were burning out devotees right and left. Sannyasis fell down, you know, 10 times more than they do now. How many sannyasis took sannyas in a year? That many fell down. There were never more than 19, 20 sannyasis when Prabhupada was here, and there were tons of people taking sannyas every year. You know? I know. I used to do the initiation ceremonies here every year when they would happen. There were tons of them. I used to know all the names of all the sannyasis. And it was never more than 19, 20 at a time. You know? Now we got up to 80 or something. 80 or 90. And occasionally one does fall down. But it's before it was 4, 5, 6 in a year and no one blinked an eye. And then when they came back, no one blinked an eye either. You know, it was, oh, glad to have you back. You know? Because there was a different culture being followed then. The culture that was followed then, the culture that followed now, is a lot of difference. We become much more expert now. But the culture is different. So we're just talking on principles. These aren't details. Because when you get into details, each one of these has a lot to discuss. You know, what is the nature of somebody's problem? How that should be dealt with? You know, I mean, there's a lot there. We're just talking on the principles. Because if the principle and the mentality is not right, you can't get anything together. Right? Yes. Yes.
There is a very nice quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta on this point of morality. And he said, "When I saw my Guru Maharaj, he didn't give a fig for my high moral character or my vast learning. I understood what caliber of spiritual master I had." So there was somebody that had the entire Gita right down by the age of 7 and wonderful character, vast learning.
Hmm. You know, he was like the minister or the court astrologer for the king of Tripura.
Right.
So, I mean, as far as material life goes, you know, he was right on the top. He was the minister for a king of a country.
And he said, "I saw my spiritual master didn't give a fig for those particular aspects, because again, they were sub-religious and the real business
yeah.
is Krishna practice."
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's very important what you said, that we understand what kind of a conditional load we are actually bringing to Krishna consciousness, and how long it takes most of us to dump that once and for all behind us.
Takes a while.
And actually how much of our thinking is still influenced by that. Because you even see, let's take an aspect like punya.
Mm.
People see a great advanced soul in a position which to them looks like suffering.
Mm.
And they're immediately thinking, but how can Krishna do this to somebody that spent an entire lifetime simply worshipping him and dedicating to him?
Mm.
So they're still looking very much in terms of mundane morality, mundane piety with its concomitant result, its reward.
Mm.
If I'm good, then God will pat me on the back, and if I'm naughty, I'll get the big smack and have to sit in the dark forever. And they're still very much looking in those terms.
Mm. Because that's the point. Conditioned nature just means where we are today means the culmination of all of our activities in the material world up to today. And this just happens to be the point that we're at. So how we look, how we see, how we understand, it's going to have a particular perspective. And that's going to be properly engaged by looking at it through the viewpoint of a particular varna or ashram. And then, but that only has any perfection when that vision sees through that to Krishna. You know, when Krishna is at the end of that, is the goal of that. But we have to understand it's just like that. Is those who have a conditioned nature in one way, they're going to do that. Now it's a matter of purifying it. Like we said, someone has a position of a manager. Now it's a matter of purifying that. If they make trouble, it means they're not pure. You can't change their mentality. I've heard that said many times. If someone behaves in such a way, they have to change their personality. That's impossible. Whoever says that doesn't know anything about the subtle body. Just like you can't change the gross body, you're not going to change the subtle body. Maybe you're too fat, you can make it thinner. You're too thin, you can make it more. You can bring it to a normal. But you can't change it. So in the same way, is the mentality may be distorted in so many ways. It can only be purified, but in the same way. So someone is very bold. Now, boldness is not always considered bad. Like a little kid. A little kid comes up to you, very boldly walks up to you and starts talking to you or asks you, or can you help me do this? That's boldness to do that. But no one minds because of the kid's innocence. So boldness is not a bad quality. It's if you use it for your own purposes, then that's not, you know, supported by the culture, then it's considered bad. Right? So someone is very bold, you can purify that so they're bold for Krishna. I mean, you see in the very early days, it would take some boldness to be able to go to England, you know, from America, never been there, you know, you're in your early 20s, you don't know diddly about how the material world works, you know, the only thing you knew before was how to, you know, roll a joint in American flag, you know, rolling papers and that, and then you go there and then you just walk into, you know, John Lennon's place and arrange a place for Prabhupada to stay, and, you know, get him to pay for this and that. That's bold. You know, no devotee will do that today. Some devotees will. I heard one devotee, he wanted to preach to the you know, whatever, the president come dictator, you know, come megalomaniac of some country in Africa. He flies into the country. He, you know, goes to... finds out from the airport how you hire a limousine, hires a limousine, gets in the limousine, drives straight to the president's palace, and because he's in a limousine, they let him in. He must be some big guy to come in a limousine, you know. And then he goes in straight and preaches to the president, and the president becomes, you know, favorable to devotional service and starts chanting. And that's called bold. Now that's pure. But someone else is bold, and then they disturb people. You know, they butt in on things, they do things, and it annoys everybody. So that means the boldness is impure. So you have boldness, it's not bad. You have to purify it. So now we can say, I don't know how to purify the person's boldness. Therefore, we can't help you here. You are managing in this place, we can't help you. So we don't know, plus since you are in this impure state, we would be very, devotees here would be very happy if you didn't manage. So if you can do something else, fine. If not, then you should find some other place. But they shouldn't mind if someone else knows how to deal with that improperly directed boldness and can correct it. Then it's fine. We couldn't help them here, but, you know, over in this zone, they were able to there, and the leading devotees there could straighten the guy out, and he's doing quite nicely now. You know, so all the better for him, you know. So this is a very different mentality. Like that. Means there must be balance. Means Vaishnav means balanced. Conditioned nature means unbalanced. Right? There must be an imbalance. Only a devotee is perfectly balanced. So if we find difficulty with that, that's also natural. When I'm speaking of these things, it's also natural that we're going to have these conditionings where we're going to view things from the platform of morality. We're going to view things from the platform of sensuality as the worst thing in the world, like that. That's natural. But it should be accepted that this is the position, and then we try to work on it. So the person who's had the problem, they have to understand that they have a problem. And those who also see it in an improper way have to be able to recognize that they're also seeing it in an improper way. Then you can make something happen. So that someone thinks like this, or the common devotee wants to know, or the common devotee thinks it's a cover-up, that's natural. But the thing is they should be preached to so they understand that they have a taste for something else other than hearing what, you know, crazy things devotees got into. Yes.
I always remember when I first joined the Balabhadra was our Bhakta leading. He said you can either develop the mentality of a fly, which is always looking to relish food, or the mentality of a bee that's looking for nectar. And the honey, so I think it means topics even of the job, or this one thing to always hear about, oh, did you hear this one, did this, is it actually very much a fly mentality?
Yes.
Maybe misery loves company, it's that kind of thing. There's nothing valuable normally to be extracted from this.
Yeah, it's not. It means a leader may have to hear some of these things, because then he knows what's going on in his temple or in his yatra. So he may need to know some detail to find out how bad it is, so how he deals with it. But you only need to know that much. How much you need to know to work with it, you don't have to know one detail more. Right? What's this devotee's problem? Oh, he's into drugs. Right? You know? You don't have to know what he smoked when, what kind of pipe he used, or whether he used a silver spoon or a gold spoon, or he snorted it off a piece of paper or with a little straw. You get into that, that's Maya. You simply have to know this person is into drugs, maybe which kind it is, so you know kind of which mentality they're in, they are. Then you can tell if they're, how you say, low response nature, so they get into downers, or they're high response and they get into uppers. You know? Then you kind of know a little bit how to deal. But more than that, you don't have to know. You know, or he has a problem with, you know, the ladies. You don't have to get into gory details. That's Maya. You just have to know he has this problem, so therefore we correct the situation like this. If we can help him. If we can help, we try. If we can't, we at least talk to him and let him understand, and let him understand why we can't help and why the situation that they're in now is not good, and then help them adjust to a new situation. And as long as they're cooperative, nice. If they're not cooperative, then one may have to be strong. But if they are cooperative, then strength is not required. You know, straightforwardness, yes, but strength.
And there were occasions, Maharaj, where I heard Srila Prabhupada also on the issue of cover-up was saying, if what happened to this individual gets out to the general mass of the body, he will never be able to come back.
Yes.
So Prabhupada seemed to feel it very important that the jiva gets a chance to again reassert himself in his rightful position.
Hmm.
The Prabhupada would say, no, this shouldn't get out, this shouldn't be, because there's a good chance we can save this person that can come.
Because Prabhupada was worried about the individual. When we say, oh, like that, it should get out, and what does it matter? How can they be a leader? That means we do not care for the individuals, except one, ourselves. But actually, you care for individual, then that's Prabhupada's is the right mentality. Because the thing is, someone does so much, and then they fall, because Maya is very strong. Everybody's going to have to come to those platforms. Like that. Everybody's going to have to come to... So many times it'll be seen, okay, the leaders then they seem to cover up for each other. But it's not necessarily cover up. It's that they're in the position, they understand what is actually being gone through. So they understand that the person needs help in this way. They're doing a good job, but now they have a weakness in this side that has to be supported. But someone who doesn't know what it's like, then it's not good for them to speak so strongly. Like that. Prabhupada would always say, first you do what they're doing, then you complain. If you'd have a devotee doing big, big service, and someone else who wasn't, and they were just complaining about this person all the time, he would say, first you do what they're doing. Or he would say, oh, okay, so you do what they're doing, and since they're not good at it, we'll take them out of that and give them some other service. So you'd have devotees who were complaining about the temple president, the next thing they would find, they were the temple president, and that temple president probably would take and make president somewhere else. You know? That would happen. Or he would just tell them, you know, unless you can manage this temple, then you don't speak. You leave it for other managers to decide what to do with this person. Don't you talk. You know? You have your own problems. So it's hard to balance it. Because nowadays everybody has the right to yell and scream. You know? Which is okay. But then they should also understand that others also have the same right. Means every living entity has the same right to be understood as an individual and to express themselves. What to do? Yes, loudly.
So, you know, when you spend, you know, everybody has a limited amount of energy. So if you spend your all energy talking about all the problems, then you have no energy to deal with the problems.
Oh, that's a good point. You can hear? You're saying that everyone only has a limited amount of energy. So therefore, if you spend all your energy worrying about others' problems, and their problems that you can't deal with, then it's not going to be beneficial for your own service.
No, so you can really help the other people, like you spend all day talking about what they do.
Yeah. No, you can't. When a couple of brahmacharis get together in the brahmacharya ashram and work out all the problems of the world, you know, solutions to the universal calamities, no one's benefited. Anyone's benefited? No. Just they take rest a little late and, you know, no one's benefited. You know? But whatever. It's a way to spend time.
Also destroys the structure of the society because there's no authority. Respect for authority, then nobody can follow anybody, and naturally there's a chaos.
Means the principle. Yeah, he's saying that the principle of respect for authority has to be there if you have a culture. If that's not there, the culture can't work. That has to be there. So if there's respect for authority, authorities aren't asking properly, then how to either situate them properly or to train others to take that position properly. But you want authorities, then it's all right. But if we just yell and scream and just, you know, where are these authorities? But then, where are these authorities means someone else's has to make them. So then we should find those who can make them and support them.
And naturally where there are followers, there'll be authorities also.
Yeah, where there's followers, there'll be authorities. Yeah.
And also in this pious and impious that we see very often, also impious pious people, they can take to devotional service. They're very much attached to their piety.
Yeah, it's also a problem.
And then, you know, because the main thing between pious and impious people is that impious people, due to, you know, sinful activities, they're more offensive. So when they come in contact with the devotees, naturally they criticize and all that, so they can develop taste for devotional service. While pious people, due to their pure lifestyle, then they live a more broad-minded, they can talk and appreciate, and they can develop their bhakti securities. So like we see in an example, like some very pious yogis and stuff like that, they become very attached to their piety and their situation, and they offend the devotees and they fall down. And we see sometimes very impious people like Jagan Mother, they come with contacts with the devotees, but because they are not offending them, you know, they do pop like this Hunter and Narada Muni and stuff, and they very quickly elevate themselves. Mm. So yeah. That's the main difference, I think, that those pious people, they lay offensive so they can advance past them.
Yeah. Means the material world means contradictions. Energy means contradiction. Otherwise, it's no fun. If it's always the same, it's no fun. So energy will have contradictions. So pious, you will have pious people who, being proud of their piety, are offensive to the devotional process. And you have those who are sinful, and who are, they can see that the devotional process is superior and this, and they respect, though they themselves may have difficulty following. Same time as like taking up devotional service, because of the impiety, they may have a tendency to criticize devotees. Or someone who comes from a pious background, they become a devotee, they may not have that propensity. Mm-hmm. So it can work both ways, depending. Main thing, it's all as ego. The ego is there, then all the problems come up. The ego is not there, the problems aren't there. So it's like if someone has a problem, he can go to the devotees, and the devotees are going to be kind, then you can surrender. Right? Mm. Right?
Yes.
So it's like the leader can surrender to the followers or other leaders if they know that they will reciprocate with that shelter. And then you'll see that they'll be able to properly, then when they're situated properly, reciprocate with a shelter. Just like a child, if they're dealt with very kindly, when they get older, they always deal kindly. Right? Someone who, when they're older, deals roughly, most likely if you check, when they were young, they were dealt with roughly. So, the same way, but if we ourselves can't surrender, we won't tolerate someone else's surrender. So therefore, I'm not going to surrender to anybody. Therefore, when I hear that one leader surrenders to another leader, and that leader gives shelter, I call this a cover-up. Because I myself can't surrender. So the act of surrender and shelter is called cover-up. Right? But if I can surrender, then I know what it means. I know when I have a problem, I want to go and talk to somebody, I surrender, I expect them to deal confidentially. And by doing that, I'm inspired, I do my service better. You know? Like that. Because, and then the ego is not there. Right? Of course, you're dealing with ego. If somebody feels let down or that, or feels embarrassed in the social scene, it's due to ego. You know, but there's very few people that can sit around when someone passes urine on their food while they're before they're going to eat and take their clothes and all this and call them all ill names and not get disturbed. I mean, we don't find many examples of this. Sukadeva Goswami, the Avantipur Brahmana, you know, like this. Bhagavatam mentions a few. So, like that, is that the social etiquettes and that one is conscious of and one is sensitive to. But not so sensitive that you can't surrender to somebody. Like that.
You understand that you can't solve your problems yourself, so
you can't solve your problems yourself. Yes, Mahatma.
Another aspect that makes a more complication, and it is when you see the same level as that it is meant by the disappointment of the opponent, and that is the influence of the devotee's behavior on general.
Oh yes, it's the how you say. We're speaking strongly on one side of the point to make a point, because it's the point. The point being that our faith in morality is not the real. I mean, that's not why we're doing devotional service, right? It's like we're not following the regulative principles because it's immoral and immorality is bad. We're following the four regulative principles because by breaking those principles, then it situates oneself in modes that make it very difficult to perform devotional service. Therefore, we avoid it. Because our purpose is, we want to advance in devotional service. We're not worried about the platform of morality. We're worried about devotional service. But devotional service automatically includes morality. See, the problem happens is that if you separate them, which is what happens, that point, religiosity without philosophy, or philosophy without religiosity. So what's happened is many devotees accept the Krishna conscious philosophy, but they don't accept the Krishna conscious culture. So therefore, if you don't accept the culture, you don't have morality either. So then they'll do all kinds of crazy things and say it's Krishna conscious. Because the morality is naturally there as part of the philosophy. When you apply it, it automatically has dharma and morality. They automatically go there. Just like when you have that, you automatically have the senses. If you have dharma, the senses are there. Right? A mother, out of duty, takes care of the child. What does she do? She feeds the child, clothes the child, bathes the child, does all these things. So what is she dealing with? She's dealing with the child's senses. But it's out of duty that she's doing it. It's the dharma that she's doing. So the dharma includes the senses. But if you just have the senses without the dharma, it's useless. Right? And even you have the dharma and the senses, if you don't have the philosophy, it's useless. So we can't go from philosophy without religion and say, you know, this is so impersonal, we throw this out, and then take up sub-religious principles, sub-dharma or upadharma, not even dharma, but upadharma, and say, you know, this is real. Right? Because then that's not dharma without philosophy is sentiment. Now you're dropping it from religion to sub-religion. So it becomes even more the sentiment mixed with the senses.
Sensuality.
Yeah. Yeah. So it becomes that combination. That sensuality is there within the sub-religious principle. We mix it because sub-religious is halfway between dharma and the senses. It's in the middle. It's extended sense gratification. Right? The reason for it is if you don't have it, there's no economic development. If I don't have justice, then whatever I do, I can't keep what I have. Someone will come and steal it or do something. You know, there has to be rules. This is mine, that's yours, you don't touch it, I don't touch yours. You know, I don't steal your stuff, you don't steal my stuff, I don't run off with your wife, you don't run off with mine. You know, I don't kill anybody, they don't kill me. Like that. So you have all these, then economy can prosper. Then economy prospers. Otherwise it can't prosper. Without morality, there's no economic development. So you see these two being talked, you know, together. Right? They're talking morality and leaders and the whole, what's going on in the society, and talking about economic development and the everybody doing their own thing, getting it, because they go together. You can't have one without the other. You can't have economic prosperity without morality. Right? But that morality comes from dharma. And how do you know what you're supposed to do? That comes from dharma. Therefore, dharma is first, then artha. Right? When you have dharma, there's morality and economic development, artha. And then from that, then you have kama, you have senses, sense gratification. So they go together. They're not separated. So to make that point, then we just spoke strongly on that. Now, we're talking about how the general devotee deals with it. Then we're talking about the leader himself. That's another thing. It's their duty to set proper example or this or that. If they can't do that, better they don't be a leader. But now that's not necessarily for everybody else to decide. That's in a combination of other senior devotees and themselves, then they should see, can they do it? The individual leader should see, can I lead in this way, factually? Other leaders should see, can they do? Right? And then you take the opinion of those who they're supposed to lead. But just taking what the mass says, that's not the complete picture. That's one third. One third. The other two are seeing what the other leaders say, and then the person who is actually has the position of authority, what their opinion. Right? Like you want to establish a GBC. You know, or you, let's say establish a temple president. So now you have to, who's the authority there has to see, does this person have the ability to be a temple president? Do they have good qualities? Do they have that? Then if they do, they're satisfied, then they see, well, what are the other leaders in the temple and that think of this person? Because they see them on all kinds of levels, right? The leader will see one side. Others who live with them may see another side. And their managers also. So they know what management is and what is good management, so they can say, is this person good or not? So then when they're satisfied, then you check and see what the general devotees in the temple, what do they think of this person as the temple president? So the person who has to take the ultimate responsibility has to be satisfied. That's one third. The other senior men in that temple or zone or whatever it is who have to work with them, that will be affected by their management, they have to be satisfied. And the general devotees that person will manage has to be satisfied. Then that's clear. But if it's just, you know, the general devotees, you know, and we make no distinction between these, then that's not very good. Okay. I mean, this is the system. That's right straight out of Bhagavatam. Like that. That's how you say? Maharaj Uttanapada picked Dhruva Maharaj to be king by that system. The Bhagavatam goes right through those steps. Like that. So when we get into that, that's a whole other discussion. See, half of dharma is what the individual has to do, how they interact with others, and what's their position in the whole social scene. So that's what we were discussing before. The other half of Dharma Shastra is those who lead, what they're supposed to do, how they do it. So that's another big discussion, but that's for discussing with managers. You know, so since this is a general discussion, then we just discuss with the individual, because the consideration of the individual, how they should behave, applies to everybody. Leader, follower, everybody. But how to manage only deals with the leader. So that's for those discussions. So this we always emphasize, just how each individual, including leaders, should behave as an individual. Like that. Does that make any sense? That's why we emphasize it in that way. Otherwise, when you just have the managers there, then you'll have all kinds of things to say about how they can set example like this, what are others going to think, this and that, and you know, no one's going to have faith anymore in this kind of behavior unless there's some dynamic change or something, you apologize to the devotees or like that. You know, that's another discussion. That's heavier than what we've said here. You know? Because the general devotee may affect themselves or one or two others, their family members or their small group of friends, you know, unless they make a campaign. But one leader makes problems, it affects so many. So it's a bigger problem. Like that. But, you know, you can't lead if there's no followers. One may say, well, a really good leader will create, but you have to have some potential to create it from. Like you can say, a really good carpenter could make, you know, first-class furniture out of orange crates. But it's not true. First-class carpenter can make something first-class out of first-class wood. Right? And the guys down at Shelda, they make furniture out of orange boxes. Right? And then, So, the whole point is a good leader can make something dynamic happen if he has those who have the potential to be good followers. They may not be trained as followers. He can train them as followers. And then, those who you can train as good followers, then from amongst those, some have the potential to lead, and he'll be able to train them as leaders also. But if the potential is not there, then how are you going to do it? So we can always say, well, if they're so great and wonderful, but why is it that the leader has to be a Shaktivesha avatar, and we can be, you know, the lowest of the low? No, it's that we also have to see, as a devotee, we have to see our side in it also. That we also have a responsibility in the system. And if we don't follow, then the system can't work. Any more than a bad leader can't make things happen, bad followers can't either. Bad followers always get a bad leader. Good followers sometimes get a bad leader.
Good leader wouldn't want to lead bad followers.
Well, a good leader who is not a masochist would not want to lead bad followers. Sometimes out of duty they do it anyway. Yes?
Maharaj, is it of necessity true that a really good follower will always be a good leader, or not necessarily?
If they have the potential to be a good leader, but you can't have a good leader who's not a good follower. Because you look, Prabhupada is an excellent leader. Super excellent. He's a super excellent follower of his spiritual master. We see he excelled amongst, you know, his godbrothers in following the orders of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Therefore, we see he's the most excellent leader. You can have someone who's an excellent follower who's not a good leader. They don't have the nature. That's there. But you cannot have a good leader who's not a good follower. Therefore, the Vedic culture starts with the individual understanding their own position. They don't start with how you're going to manage it, how you're going to this and that. That's the next stage. The first stage is train everybody how to act themselves, who they are, how to behave, and how to interact with others. Then from those who actually understand that, then you look for who has the potential to lead, and then draw them out and train them in leading. But just because someone has the potential to manage doesn't make them a leader. Right? Manage means you just you're moving the material nature around. And some can do it on a greater scale, some on a less scale. But leadership means that you're dealing with people. You can inspire people. Right? You go to Harvard School of Management, you learn basically how to move things and how to move people to get the things you want. So the people are dealt with as things also. But a leader means you deal with the people as people. So it's very different. It's very different. So, whatever. Leaders may or may not have dealt in that way. But this means then they have to be trained. You know, if you know first how to behave yourself, then you can lead. So are we first training people to behave themselves? That's the thing. Right? And when they learn how to behave themselves, then they start to lead. Yes.
So when you become a good follower, then naturally you see what inspires you to follow that person,
yeah, yeah.
So then you come to a position of
yeah.
a leader, so
that's good.
You act
yeah.
in such a way.
Yeah, yeah, very good point. Point he's making the point that if you follow nicely, then you know, if you're a good follower, you'll know what it is that's inspired you from the leaders. So then you yourself, if you have that potential, then you can then develop those qualities that will inspire the others. Because if you're inspired by something, it's a quality you can do, generally. You're fine.
Because we seem to have, in the past, a few people put in leadership positions who were excellent followers, but I mean, they were inspirational, definitely, but they were not per se managers. You could see that. And even some of them, in their own admission, would say, "I'm not a manager. I actually don't want to do anything." But we could see in their own daily life, his sadhacharya conduct, they were so very inspirational for the devotees. But they couldn't, they'd say, for instance, solve basic managerial problems.
No. That should be left to managers. They should preach. Because the main thing is the preaching. One is inspired by the example and the preaching. Then you want everything to go nicely. Like you have a, let's say we go to a big festival. Now when we come back from the festival, what do we talk about? The good kirtans, the nice lectures, nice prasadam, nice association with the devotees, you know, like that, or wonderful parikrams. Anybody comes back and, oh, it was so great, the guy managed this and that, and, you know, very few will talk about that, except some other managers. But that management has to go on. You know, prasad didn't happen. Somebody didn't just, you know, wiggle the end of their nose and then poof, there was a whole bunch of things there to eat. It means that was big management to get prasad happening. Mm. Like you hear about the Kateri Utsav. Like that, there was, in so many Utsavs, there were thousands and thousands of devotees would come. So they had to organize the finances and places to stay for literally tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of devotees to come. Stay, and each one was personally cared for by staying in someone's house or this arrangement. Everybody was fed. But it mentions a few verses like that, but you'll find the basic explanation of the pastime is mostly talking about the wonderful kirtans and what happened and all the different devotional activities. But it takes great management. So the thing is that we're inspired about is the nice things, the lectures, the kirtans, the example. These are what we're inspired by. So those who can preach like this should be in positions that are respected. See, up to now, even today, someone is respected basically because of a managerial position. It's just a spiritual position, no one really cares. Mm. No one really cares. You know? Like someone's in a big, like anybody talks about, let's say, you have senior devotees who are on the GBC and there at the meetings and making comments and very much in the picture, you talk about them. There's some who have, you know, taken leaves of absences or retired from that or that. They're still doing the same service, you mean the same sadhana, the same preaching. Anybody talks about them? Hardly. Because we respect management. Who has the money, who has the power. Hmm. Right? That's the European paradigm. So if they don't have that, who cares? So you have a very senior devotee come into a temple, give nice lectures, set great example, but if they're not in a position of authority, then no one feels obliged to follow. Maybe an individual will be inspired. So therefore, the tendency is to make them into managers. Make them the GBC there, managing GBC or managing this or that. But that shouldn't be. It should be that they can be a sadhu, they can be a preacher, and that is respected. And the managers then try to cooperate and work with them and encourage devotees to take examples from these people. Then it works very nicely. That's the actual system. But because of the Western, you know, imperialistic, colonialistic kind of tendencies, unless you're in a position of power, who cares? You know, who cares?
And then you'll find in those situations, sometimes managerially, you might even have so many Indian gentlemen from the community or big tycoons or big money men and know virtually nothing of Shastra, even that Vedic culture, and they get brought in and consulted or they get to call the shots because they're putting in too much, and then that becomes even more disturbing.
Yeah, it can be a great disturbance. unless they're made into devotees. The whole point is they have the nature to deal with the money and management, but it still has to be pure. So you have to purify them. Then they can do so much. But that was Prabhupada's idea, you see, in India. He would involve them. They would have board of trustees, and that was all the big life members, all the original, like big guys, big, top guys. But the idea was to cultivate and make them into devotees. And then naturally, because they're so expert, you know, they can run huge, they can run a factory with 10,000 people in it and spin crores or rupees. So certainly they can, you know, help organize a, you know, a festival, a Rath Yatra that costs a few lakhs, or make facility for, you know, 50 or 100 devotees. You know, they have the material knowledge how to do it. They just have to have the spiritual training. So therefore, we train them in the spiritual. We as sadhus, as Brahmins, train them in the spiritual side. And they as people who can move the material nature, then they do that for Krishna. So it works very nicely together. But it takes a maturity on the part of the temple devotees. They have to be preaching and setting example.
And that other point you mentioned earlier that we suffer from, where everything just gets down to it's all one. So a brand newcomer's voice is as important as somebody who's been there 25 years.
Yeah.
And then that extends, you know, to the congregation. They get to feel it's all one. I'm as good as you, even though I've got my TV on and my this and that. And then, you know, that just seems to make the problem worse.
Yeah.
So at this point with the leaders that...
Loudly.
The point with the leaders, Srimati Shadow made that, you know, there are many kinds of leaders, like a demigod is a leader, father is a leader, you know, a Brahman is a leader. So they're leaders in different levels, like the kings, they try to get the things kind of together, the gross material, not so gross, but things together, and the Brahmas, they help people to develop, you know, more fine aspect of personality, and father, you know, takes care of the children's senses and all that. So all of them are leaders.
Yeah, all of them are leaders. You could hear? You're saying that there's different kinds of leaders. You have Brahmins, you have demigods, you have kings, you know, the father in the family, the teacher, like this. See, the difference is leaders, there's managers, it means you're good at moving the material energy. Leader means you can inspire people. So a good leader may not be a good manager, but they can inspire managers to manage. So that makes them a leader. That either they can lead themselves and then they can inspire others to do it so they don't have to do it, or they can do it themselves. Or they know that they can just inspire others to follow their nature and inspire them to do. That makes them a leader. So leader means they can inspire people. Well, manager means they know how to move the material energy. So they don't necessarily are the same. So a good preacher, dynamic preacher, doesn't necessarily may not be a good manager. But by their preaching, so many managers and others become inspired and they do their work so much better. What time is it now?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Okay, so we should end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.